latest news from Financeland with Wiley Sims from Smartline, station sponsor.
The information provided in this segment is general advice only. Listeners should seek individual advice from their accountant, financial advisor or broker to see if the product is right for their situation. ACL number 385325.
So with me in the studio, back from the Christmas break, is Wiley Sims from Smartline. How are you, Wiley?
I'm great, Mitchell. Only sorry to be back. I'd rather be out there fishing.
And how was your Christmas break?
Mate, I was the turkey at Christmas. I was the turkey cooker and managed to succeed reasonably.
Oh, good on you. I think Financeland is sort of getting back to normal now, but what's been happening of late?
Well, there's been some concerns about valuations going in, and a couple of the broking groups have actually been putting some concerns into APRA about the fluctuations in valuations. And the importance of this is really to do with the loan-to-value ratio, something we keep harping on about. As we've mentioned before, if someone borrows less than 80% of the value of their property, they don't end up with lender's mortgage insurance. If it's greater than 80% of the value of the property, not what they've paid for it, then they incur lender's mortgage insurance. And unfortunately, it cuts in exponentially. If you're a little bit over 80%, doesn't cost a lot. If you go up to 90%, costs a lot more. And if you go above 90%, costs heaps. And it's all to do with the value of the loan, of course. So the more you borrow and the higher that loan-to-value ratio, the more lender's mortgage insurance you pay. The problem that we have, both as borrowers and for the broker, of course, is if the valuation comes in low. So if somebody borrows, say, purchases a property at $400,000 and it's only valued at, say, $350,000, then they either have to find more money to keep that loan-to-value ratio within the permissible level for the lender, or they're going to be forced into lender's mortgage insurance, or they have to pay more. And then sometimes it can actually sink the deal because people just can't find the money. So that's one of the reasons that we're concerned about it. And the problem is we get this huge fluctuation that occurs. And we might just, you know, give an example. Sometimes some of the lenders will use a computer-based valuation where it'll just simply look at properties sold, similar properties within a 500-metre radius. But that's a crude level because we might find, for example, in a block of apartments, we could have a brand-new apartment with all new security arrangements, new air conditioning units, new fire services, etc. And around the block, there's some old 40-year apartment that's never been refurbed. And they will both go into this computer-based valuation together, and naturally there'll be some variations in there. But we also get variations between individual valuers, and that's the biggest problem we got. Different firms tend to be some more conservative than others. And indeed, there's a couple of firms that I kind of shake my head if it comes out and we end up with them, because we don't pick the valuers. It goes through a pool, which is the banks basically have a pool of lenders, and it's really luck of the draw. You can, of course, appeal the valuation, but if people are concerned about it, then we would need to try and just put the property in the best light we can to try and get the best valuation. So it's a real issue, and again, the lenders are actually, or the, not so much the lenders, but the some of our professional bodies are actually going in there trying to bat and trying to get some of those issues resolved.
And before Christmas, on our last show for 2014, 3 weeks ago, you said that you were going to help listeners with some tips on paying off some of their mortgages more quickly, because obviously that's most people's New Year's resolutions, I would imagine. What are some of those tips?
Well, of course, everybody wants to get rid of the mortgage as soon as they can, but there's some simple ways you can do that. And first and most obvious thing is if you've got a bit of spare cash, which would be nice if we did have, but something like a tax return, for example.
Not after then, Christmas, no cash
not,
there.
Not after Christmas, no. But if after you maybe get a tax refund check, maybe you get a bonus or something, then just put all that on the mortgage, because the majority of mortgages have got redraw facility, and if you've got redraw facility, it's just a good place to park your money, and it's coming off the principal of the loan. If your loan has an offset facility, again, that's something you should consider. So you can actually offset any savings against the property. And if you even use your credit card wisely and live off your credit card and pay your whole net monthly salary in, you can use that as offset and pay out that credit card completely at the end of each month and wipe it clear. The other thing you could do is consolidate debt. If you've got credit cards and personal loans there, then it may be worthwhile considering putting it into a refinance arrangement and have all of your loans in one basket and reduce the amount that you have, the net amount that you have to pay on all of your debt in the month, and put that money that you're already paying onto the mortgage and reduce that. And we'll talk a little bit about refinancing later. But just paying off extra, just to give an example, I only worked this the other day with some prospective borrowers. They were looking to borrow $380,000 for a new home, and $200 extra per month off their minimum repayments basically reduced the term of the loan from 30-year loan to 25 years just by voluntarily paying off an extra $200 a month. Now, I always put things back in common language. That's a slab of beer a week. So if you forgo a beer, if you're in the habit of drinking that much, not everybody would be, but there are compromises we can make in our lifestyle, reduces that loan term from 30 to 25 years, and that saves about $70,000 over that loan just by paying that bit extra off.
And why might some people want to refinance?
Well, basically, we may find a situation that people's circumstances change. When people go into buying a home and borrowing for a loan, they should be at least looking 5 to 10 years out in terms of their planning. But things don't always work out smoothly, and things can occur in your life that you hadn't planned for. It may be, for example, you've got a new job and you've got an opportunity with extra income to be able to pay the loan down faster. Or alternatively, you might have a new job and you might have less money, so you want to stretch the loan out to a different repayment schedule. So they're good reasons that you may want to refinance. Had a client recently where the partner has taken up full-time childcare. She'd given away her her job to look after her new child, and they were going to have more family. And they were looking to reduce their repayments to a lower schedule. So they were ahead on their repayments, so we refinanced them and basically reduced their monthly expenditure by about $400 a month by simply changing their lender and changing the loan over to a lower rate, that was the amount that they owed on the mortgage. People might be taking on an investment property, for example. They might want to leverage their existing property where they've got equity in the loan and borrow against a new property as an investment property, and that's another reason people would want to refinance. And we might get a situation where somebody wants to realise capital gain. In other words, they might have bought the property for $300,000, maybe 10, 12 years ahead down the track. The property's worth $500,000. They could refinance at $400,000 and actually draw $100,000 worth of equity out of that property and maybe use it for other lifestyle means. Of course, they may have to pay tax in there, but that's for their accountant to sort out. But nevertheless, they're all reasons that people would want to refinance. We might find that somebody has an investment property. Some people are fortunate enough to have an investment property or two, and they might determine they want to live in that investment property. Well, the loan that was set up for an investment may not be the best loan if it's for an owner-occupied, because usually with many investors, they're not interested in paying down the principal, but if it's an owner-occupied, most people do, so that would be another reason you'd want to refinance.
So why wouldn't they want to pay down the principal? Is that to do with negative gearing or other tax benefits?
It's really most financial advisors or accountants would recommend that they keep the loan as large as possible to maximise the taxation benefits, because the totality of your interest is tax deductible, but your principal is not. It would, again, depend on what the client's objectives are. There's no two clients going to be the same. I've got plenty of investors that are happy to do principal and interest because they actually want to own that second property quickly, where others are quite happy for it just to plod along, wait for the property to appreciate over time, and simply pay the interest. So it depends on people's circumstances. But if you were on an interest-only investment loan and you did decide to live in that residence, you would probably want to change it to principal and interest.
And some people might want a lower interest rate as well?
Yeah, interest rates are common a reason for people to want to switch interest rates. You might be on a variable rate, which many people are on at the moment. Around about 80% of people are on variable rates. With the really excellent fixed rates that are available, under 5% for 5 years, people want to take some of the doubt about the variance in interest rates out of their mind, and many people are choosing to lock in and refinancing on fixed rates. Alternatively, people might be on a bad fixed rate. Some people might have some long-term fixed rates. And we've still got some people that are sitting around above 6% that were on five-year fixes from some years ago. And those people may want to get into variable and get into some of the lower rates that are available at the moment.
And how do you actually go about refinancing?
Well, basically, first of all, as a broker, we say that the loan has to be a benefit to the borrower. And I'll just give an example of this. I had some young people come to me about 6 months ago, and they absolutely hated the bank they were with, which will remain nameless. They'd had a new child, and they'd had some issues with the way things were set up and when payments were supposed to be made, etc. To cut a long story short, they rang me up and they wanted to refinance out of that loan no matter what. When I sat down and crunched the figures with them, it was going to cost them $6,000. And I actually said to the husband, I said, look, how much do you hate the bank? And he said, a fair bit. I said, do you hate the bank $6,000 worth of hate? And he said, no. I said, well, that's how much it's going to cost you to get out of that loan. So sometimes there are hidden costs. They happen to be on a fixed rate, these folks. So if they'd broken that loan, it would have cost them at least $6,000 to have got out. But to refinance, basically, you'll need to have your documents prepared. As with any loan, you'll need proof of income. You'll need your ID. But the difference with a refinance, you'll need six-month loan statements with a good loan history on it to prove that you've been a good risk. And if you're refinancing any other loans, for example, credit cards or personal loans, you would need to have a six-month group of statements. And again, we're talking about statements. Statements have your name and the account number on it, not a transaction receipt, which some people give me, which we can't use. It has to have your name on it, not just the account number. And also proof of ownership of the property, which usually for most circumstances is the rate notice. So they're the documents that you would need. And again, some of the lenders may have some nuances which may require some additional documentation. But to make life easier, if people come to their broker with those documents, it makes the refinancing process much easier.
So what's the process of refinancing?
Well, first of all, you'd need to meet with your mortgage broker and discuss what your current loan is and what your needs are, because we have to find a loan that's going to suit your needs. We then compare the options. We've got over 25 lenders on our panel, 16 banks and 9 other lenders, which include building societies, credit unions, as well as private funders. And we need to determine, as we mentioned before, is refinancing the right option for you? Quite often it's not. And if you're getting good advice, your broker would tell you that maybe it's not right for you at this time. And then we'd go out and negotiate the deal for you. You then have to complete the loan application forms once you've selected the lender of your choice. We'd package up and lodge the application, and we liaise with the lender on the behalf of the client. So we manage the steps right through to the refinancing, doing all the legwork and paperwork for our clients. And we negotiate and sort out issues between the old lender and the new lender to make sure it's a nice, smooth process for the borrower.
But the main thing is that there's got to be a benefit there for the borrower.
That's right, Mitchell. We won't recommend a loan at Smartline unless there's a defined benefit to the borrower. And that can vary. It may be reduced repayments, which is probably most common issues, but it could be features of the loan. For example, people may want a simple loan, a no-frills loan, and they may want to package it where they can get things like linked credit cards and offset and redraw facilities in that packaging. People may want access to internet banking, or they might prefer a bank that's got an extensive branch network. It would depend on their circumstances. Sometimes people want to repay their repayment schedule, maybe switch from monthly to fortnightly as opposed to bi-monthly. And a little word of caution there, the difference between fortnightly payments and bi-monthly, they sound the same, but they're not. Fortnightly payments fall due every fortnight, so you would have 26 repayment periods in a year, where bi-monthly means that you would have to pay twice per month on the anniversary date of the month. So that means that if you're a fortnightly salary earner, over time you'd slowly get out of sync with your repayment schedule. So you need to be a little bit cautious if the lending documents actually say bi-monthly or quarter-monthly, rather than commonly with monthly with most of them, if you wanted to go to fortnightly or weekly payments.
And you talked about that $6,000 of hate, the cost of refinancing. What would make up that cost of refinancing?
Well, with that particular client, the cost of refinancing in that situation was mainly to do with the break cost of coming out of the fixed rate. But there are other costs there that you may have to consider. For example, you may get new application fees with the new lender. Application fees will vary. We've got many lenders that waive application fees. They have them at zero or fairly minimal level of $200, but they shouldn't generally be over $800. And again, I've got one lender that's got extremely low interest rates, but they do have a rather hefty upfront fee. So it's like everything, you tend to get nothing for nothing in this world. And if you've got a low rate, there's usually some penance that you'll pay somewhere along the line. You may have exit fees, as this client that I was talking to you earlier had with fixed rates. But again, if you've got some of the old loan products, they did have exit fees with them, many of the old loans that were written a few years ago. We may find, again, you may incur stamp duty if there was some change to the loan itself. You may fall into a lender mortgage insurance. Again, going back to what we were talking about earlier, if we had something like valuations that came in low, for example, the property in some suburbs may not be worth what it was when you bought it. A home that you've maybe constructed yourself, if you were to refinance in the short term, if it was a house and land package, you may find that it's not quite at the value that you paid for it, so you may end up with additional lender's mortgage insurance, and that can be quite expensive.
If I've purchased a property and obviously got the finance, and say 10 years down the track I'm looking to refinance and the value has gone up quite a fair bit over that time, what difference will that make for me when I'm refinancing?
Well, generally that puts you in a good situation. If you've got more equity in the property, then many of the lenders lend on the basis of rate for risk and rate for volume. So assuming that your risk levels haven't changed, you've got good repayment history, etc., then you would have a lower risk because your loan-to-value ratio would be reduced. So you may find that that the interest rate above 90% might be at a certain level, at 80% might be at a certain level, and down at 60% it might be quite low. So you'd generally expect to get a lower interest rate and lower repayments as a result of that.
And what specials do you have this week for the listeners?
Okay, again, some late Christmas presents. I've still got these wonderful calendar magnets with all the school holidays in them. If anyone would like one of those, we've got the new smart guide. And if anyone would like a copy of them or either of them, happy to send them out. And just ring me on 1300 280 342 and we'll send them out straight away. And fridge calendar magnet's quite useful, particularly because it's set up with all of the public holidays for Victoria in it.
And we're back into the swing of things now, so you're going to be on next week as well. What's coming up next week?
Well, next week, Mitch, I thought we might have a chat about how to help first-home buyers out and how to save for that deposit for the first home, which many first-home buyers struggle with.
And the number that people should ring you on?
1300 280 342.
Thanks, Wally. Good to see you back in the studio after that break, and we'll speak to you next week.
Cheers, Mitch.